Pee now! Pee like the wind! I'm scared.
This Galactic Netcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, April 11th, 2013, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 65. From Waterloo, Iowa, I'm Dave Nero the Hero Nelson. Also here from Wausau, Wisconsin, is Brad Machine Gun Joe Ludwig and Anessa Calamity Jane Moyens from Denton, Texas. How are you guys?
Doing good. How are you?
Not too bad. Can you explain the names?
Yeah. It's actually from our pick for the next sci-fi film school episode.
Oh, yeah.
Death Race 2000.
Yes, that was an awesome movie, wasn't it?
Yes, from what I remember. When I watched it about a week ago, I was out sick for the day, and I had been taking NyQuil and cold medicine and kind of was in and out of consciousness as I watched it, but I was entertained.
That was probably the best way to watch that movie. Hopped up a little bit on something. So, yeah, we're going to do that next week. Make sure that you subscribe to the Mega Feed to get the next Sci-Fi Film School podcast. This is the Alien Invasion. Can you believe it? We're at 65.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Felt like only yesterday when we did 64.
Only felt like yesterday when you posted something on Facebook saying, hey, people, I'm looking to do another show. Who would like to do that? And I went, I'll give it a try.
Yeah. And the rest is history. Isn't it? Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad that you said something, Brad?
Yeah, this has been a really fun and interesting ride to get to 65.
And so, unfortunately, yeah, this is the last episode. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Okay. I don't like you anymore.
All right. Sorry. All right. So this is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. The show is divided into three parts. We have the news. We have the creature feature. That's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien. And our picks for the week. And when we say alien, we're talking about extraterrestrial aliens, just to clarify. For our audio subscribers, if you'd like to see us record the show live, just follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. We'll let you know when and where that's going to be. Usually, it's around, when I say around, I mean 8:30 this week, but it's usually closer to 8 o'clock Central Time at galacticnetcasts.com/live. So are you guys ready to go?
Yep, let's do it.
In the news.
And Anessa has the first story.
I have the first story. All right, so there is a documentary coming out called Sirius, and it showcases the claims of UFO researcher who has dedicated years of his life to prove that aliens exist and that the U.S. government has been hiding this evidence. I forget the name of the guy. Stephen Greer, I think, is the name. But, so Stephen Greer is the guy that's creating this documentary, and he claims that he has found, or someone has found, a 6-inch alien being, like the carcass of an alien. And he's been trying to raise money to have scientists do an autopsy and study this alien being. And it was discovered in the Atacama Desert in Chile. So, but this footage is going to be included in the documentary, and the footage is about 17 minutes in length. I haven't seen it. I haven't had a chance to take a look at it, but I believe it's there in the story from Discovery News. So, the little alien being we've mentioned these aliens in the past, but apparently now we know what some of the aliens look like. The alien is from planet Zeba.
Shut up.
Yes. So we have evidence of Zebans. And the Zebans have been here for the past couple of years, and they're friendlies. They've been helping us fight our fight against the Guten that have been taking their sweet and dandy to invade Earth.
Now, okay, this can't be the actual size of an adult Zebon, right? This has got to be some kind of, like, fetus.
I honestly don't know. They said that it was from the planet Zeba, so I don't know if it's specifically, like, that race of Zebans or if there's different races that have ventured over here. But yeah, apparently they're tiny aliens on Zeba.
Maybe they're tiny aliens from a tiny planet. Maybe their planet's like this small, you know? It's like they're, it's like an asteroid, like a small
maybe.
Asteroid. But it's huge, it's like huge to them, you know?
It's a beach ball. They just hang out.
And we've got a picture, if you're seeing the video portion of the show. We have a picture that's up here right now where you get a sense of scale of the size of this particular being, which is 6 inches tall. You can see the gloved hands of the surgeon looking to do some kind of work with the alien body.
So wasn't there, like, small, like, itty-bitty aliens on Men in Black?
There was. The one inside that suit or whatever. I don't remember.
Yeah, so maybe they were onto something, the Men in Black people.
Maybe they met some of the Zebans and had them help out with... The Zebans gave advice or input into alien races for Men in Black, maybe.
They were creative consultants on the movie. Possibly. So, when is this? Do you know when this documentary is going to air?
I don't remember. Hang on, let me see. April 22nd? For some reason, April 22nd is in my mind, but I don't know why. Yes, the film premiere is April 22nd.
Okay. Do you know where? Because I know it's going to be online, but is it going to be on a TV channel too, or it?
The story didn't really say.
Okay. Oh, you know what? So, I've seen the trailer for this movie. So it says in the trailer, it says in theaters and online.
If it's in the theaters, it's probably a limited release. So you might have it a couple of theaters throughout the country and then just primarily online.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
It'll probably end up at places like the Angelic down in Dallas or somewhere in LA or New York or Austin.
It's probably going to be like the producers of this movie renting out places, you know?
Probably. So you never know. Maybe they'll rent out a place in Waterloo.
Ooh, that's, you know what? That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. I would imagine it's wherever Mr. Greer is from. So... He'll probably do that, like, in his hometown, have, like, this big premiere, and that'll probably be in theaters. And, yeah, it'll be online primarily. That's what I'm guessing.
So, Brad, what's your thoughts on this? You looking forward to this? You want to see this?
They're so tiny and kind of creepy looking. It'd be interesting to, I'm not sure I would be all that interested to see something very tiny getting dissected, quite frankly. Not overly excited. It'd be cool to have, you know, documented actual proof if it is legit, but I wouldn't actually want to watch it. It'd be like, cutting apart a gerbil. Some people in biology class had to dissect a frog. I mean, that unless you're really into biology, you're probably not going to be overly excited to watch a little creature get cut open.
Do you think the guy?
Yeah, I remember having to do frogs in biology. Did a pig.
You dissected a pig?
Not in high school biology. In high school, we did frogs and like earthworms. And then I wanted to take anatomy and physiology, and they had dissected cats and stuff in there.
Ew.
But they messed up my schedule, and I was never able to take anatomy and physiology. And in college, I took bio 1 and 2, and at some point, I think we did the usual frog thing, and then we did a little baby piglet.
Okay.
So.
Oh,
Babe?
Guy.
Babe the little pig?
Yeah, you dissected Babe?
We dissected Babe.
Oh, way to go, Anessa.
I'm an awful, awful person. Sorry.
So gross.
So it's kind of funny that you would have this as a story because on my pick, just a little teaser, my pick is another podcast, and they were actually talking about this in their show, on their show. Just weird coincidence that you would pick this as a story.
Oh, that was Brad.
Oh, I mean Brad. Sorry.
All I did was add the weekly world news bit.
Okay, all right.
But Brad's the one who picked it.
Well, good job, Brad.
Way
to have foresight. Foresight?
It's psychic connection is what it is.
Yeah. Do you guys want to move on from the story? Is there any more that we should talk about?
No, but I think we could probably let people know where they could, how they could contact us.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, let's do that. If you have an opinion on this story, do you think this guy is fake? Do you think this is a real alien? Let us know. Give us feedback. The email address is galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can also voicemail us, call our voicemail, 805-328-3966. What?
I said sexy voice, Dave.
Okay, let's do the sexy voice. galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail, 805-328-3966, or you can actually use that to text us as well. Jason from Kansas, who we have a voicemail from later on in the show, he actually texted me from the convention he was at over the weekend.
Nice.
He used it as a text message. We would love your feedback. Please leave it. All right, let's move on to this next story. So did a 19th century novel inspire a group of Nazi UFO hunters? What do you guys think?
No.
After reading the story, it's kind of compelling. compelling evidence. Wow. See, normally you're the person that does that. I'm the one that usually jumps in and speaks Dave and translates, and I failed miserably.
Switching roles tonight. Me too.
Yikes.
All right, so there's a book that came out in 1871 by an English politician and writer. It was called The Coming Race, and it's basically about a bunch of refugees from Atlantis, the city of Atlantis that supposedly sank. Who flee to the core of the earth after the destruction of their fabled city. And supposedly, let's see, a group was allegedly rumored to exist called the Vril Society. And that's Vril is this energy source that in the book these Atlanteans develop as like it's kind of a... like an all-encompassing kind of thing. You can use it for energy. You can use it to heal yourself or heal people. It's just this universal like substance or energy. It's called Vril. And supposedly a group of German politicians or German like military or government people, this is like, I guess, pre-Nazi Germany, they developed a society that basically, they were looking for these people. They were seriously looking into if this was a real thing or not. And then later on, the same group supposedly were tasked to find UFOs, aliens, and actually develop that technology to try to defeat their enemies using alien technology. So it's kind of interesting. I've never heard of this book. I've never heard of the theory that Atlanteans escaped into the core of the earth. This is kind of interesting.
They're talking about the Atlanteans going to the center of the earth. The 19th century, there was a lot of different stuff written at that time, and actually Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was kind of another fiction novel based on the whole hollow earth theory.
Wasn't that Jules Verne or no?
Journey to the Center of the Earth.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
And supposedly, The Coming Race was like one of the first science fiction novels, which I find fascinating, especially early science fiction.
Oh, it is Jules Verne. What did Conan Doyle write?
Wasn't he?
He was Sherlock the Sherlock guy.
Yeah, but he wrote. He did take time off when he stopped writing Sherlock Holmes. He did write some other stuff too. What the heck was it that I've got stuck in my head? The Lost World. That's what he wrote.
Okay. The Lost World.
Yes.
Way to go!
What's The Lost World about? That sounds interesting.
The Lost World, written in 1912. They go into the group of people go to the Amazon basin and find prehistoric animals.
Okay.
And things like that. Yeah, that's what I got stuck in my head.
It's really interesting how fiction goes through cycles. Like this whole hollow earth theory, they couldn't really disprove it until later on. So the theories persisted into the late 19th centuries. And all those stories about like lost worlds, lost societies, and like animals that we've never seen before, that was kind of a real thing because people had no idea. Because the Earth was not fully explored, right?
Yep. We're still discovering new species all the time.
Yeah. This story, though, reminds me of like something like the plot to a Indiana Jones movie, kind of, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Because the Nazis were always like, they always seemed to have their hands in all kinds of different things, you know?
Yeah, they were really big into the whole finding artifacts thing.
And the occult.
Significant with people's history and whatnot. So, not just any artifact. Yeah, let's go find some arrowheads.
So, this is kind of funny. This reminds me of that pic that you had a long time ago, Anessa, of the Nazis.
Nazis at the center of the earth?
Yeah.
Robo Hitler.
Yeah.
Robo Hitler.
And Jake Busey.
Yeah, because this article says some of those who believe the real society actually existed also believe the UFOs carried key members of the party. That's the real society, the Nazi party, to Antarctica, South America, and into space to continue their work after the defeat of Germany and the Axis powers in World War II. So that kind of feeds
in. Oh, yeah, that would be.
Yeah, so it feeds into.
So maybe they got their inspiration from the book, too.
Both
movies. The people that made the movie.
Both movies, that and Iron Sky, too.
Oh, yeah, Iron Sky.
Because they're going into space.
Yeah, so we see where they got their inspiration from.
The creators of those movies actually might be onto something. And there's a picture in this article that I believe is from Iron Sky as well.
Yeah, it is.
That's such a great movie. It's a really good movie. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
Yeah, it's this picture right here from the IO9 story that we got it from. And you can kind of see that just kind of to the upper, and if you're viewing the video podcast, you see the spaceship, the saucer. That's more towards the center. That isn't the Goddard-Amarung. This is the ship that actually goes to Earth.
Yep.
That has Washington and some of that small contingent to find more of the iPods.
Not the giant.
Yeah, the iPhones.
Smartphones,
sorry.
And iPods. Yeah.
Such a great movie. All right. So, yeah, it's interesting. Interesting stuff. I love stories about Nazi Germany and secret societies, and just it's fraught with legend and mystery, you know?
Yeah, most definitely.
And that's a great name too, the Vril Society. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe they did find aliens, you know? There's I've heard stories of, you know, supposed Nazi Germany UFOs, so who knows?
You never know.
Yeah. All right, let's continue on with the news. Brad, you've got the third and final story of the day.
The third and final story is the Soviet space junk that became a Moroccan UFO. WikiLeaks has gotten a document dump from 1973 to 1976, and that section of documents are being called the Kissinger Cables. And this is during the time that Kissinger was a ambassador, I believe, to that portion of the world. And he got a request from Morocco's King Hassan II for any information that the United States had about an unidentified flying object that was spotted along the coast in the early morning hours from of September 19th, 1976. Just a little snippet out of that. The object was on a generally southwest by northeast course, and it was a silvery luminescent circular shape, and gave off intermittent trails of bright sparks and fragments, and made no noise. Then, at a certain point, too, it says in the document that it actually kind of took on more of a cylindrical shape. A week later, October 2nd. 1976, Washington cabled back with a terse message saying, hope to have an answer for you next week. Regards. Typically, if you get something that ends with regards, that means please stop bothering me. The U.S. officials noted that the U.S. government was unaware of any U.S. aircraft or satellite activity in that area, be it military or civilian. And it might have been mistaken for something else. But in October of 2012, just this past year, a Canadian amateur satellite watcher named Ted Mulksan posted on a satellite internet site that the trajectory and timing of the incident matches the reentry of a piece of space junk, which specifically came from a Soviet booster engine from a rocket that was launched 2 months earlier, in July of 76. So he seems to have a key piece of evidence that actually tracked something that, of course, the U.S. government, the U.S. government might have had knowledge of it, but it was not a U.S. source of material. It was actually this booster rocket portion that had fallen out of the sky, out of orbit. So there you go.
There's a lot of stuff floating up there.
There is a ton of stuff up there. It's ridiculous.
Have you ever seen the map of all the satellites?
Yes.
It's crazy.
I'm surprised that, and I think occasionally the space station has to actually adjust course if it's larger objects.
Yep, they do.
Because if they don't, it pierces the space station. That's going to
bad things
cause
happen.
Serious problems.
Yeah, doesn't take very much, really.
No, not much at all. And everything is moving at such a high rate of speed. Even a little BB could just pew right through and do serious damage to a capsule or a being inside of the capsule. Yeah. So,
hey, on a side note, did you guys see the story that was posted today about a nuclear fusion drive they're developing to go to Mars in like a month? Like, it'll take you about 30 days to get to Mars in this nuclear fusion drive. And they say they're very close to getting it actually perfected.
I call BS on that.
No, it's like an actual, like, NASA's working with this company.
Huh. I didn't think that they'd gotten that far with fusion. I know that they've been doing a lot of stuff with kind of using basically magnetism to kind of hold containers in place so that, things don't go out of control.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
Fusion reaction.
I was surprised too. I didn't think they were that far either. So,
because I know some of the spacecrafts that has been launched recently uses an ion drive, which I don't know exactly how fast that goes, but it's faster than, is it Pioneer or Voyager that's out at the edge of the solar system?
That would be Voyager.
Voyager.
The Voyager 1 and 2. Yeah, okay. Far faster than those two craft. So
it might be possible that they're close to developing fusion energy on a small scale. I know that that's been a goal, a dream of scientists for a long time to develop, you know, actual fusion, to develop it as a clean energy source, but maybe they can do it on a small scale, i.e. a spacecraft.
The thing about fusion, though, as I recall, is basically you're making a mini sun.
Neat.
Well, you know, that's, yeah, I think that's a little dangerous. Yeah, anything, it would have to be very small scale. Ugh.
Yeah, it's not that bad. You can do it.
No, I just, it's just a small sun. There's nothing. It'd be fine.
That was a weird moment.
Superheated plasma. It's
All right. That was my side note. Sorry for taking us down that path.
That is cool, though. I didn't realize that they had come that far. I know that they've been, I can't remember what scientific documentary or show I had watched, and it showed a couple of guys working on a large piece of equipment, and they were using pretty high-powered magnetism to kind of hold stuff in place in space, essentially, so that things weren't touching, so that they could actually do some testing of some fusion-based things.
So I found, I think I found the article I was looking, or I was reading earlier, if we want to continue this talk, or we can move on.
It's up to you. I think it's kind of a fascinating way to go. I mean, and it's related. We're still on topic.
Yeah. The project funded by NASA's Innovative Advanced Concepts Program and also involving Redmond, Washington-based Space Propulsion Company is exploring a unique manipulation of nuclear fusion, according to the University of Washington. If the technology works, it would cut down the times it takes for interplanetary voyages while also reducing costs and the health risks, because you're spending less time out in space. Here. No, we have no place to post this. Never mind. I was going to post the link someplace. We'll put the link in the show notes of the podcast, definitely.
Cool.
All right, let's move on. We have the creature feature coming up. But first, want to thank Audible for their support of Galactic Netcasts. And they want to give you a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. You guys like reading books?
Yes.
I bet
you. But you know, when I'm on the road, I like to listen to them.
And you're on the road a lot. You were in Sheboygan, Wisconsin this week, right?
Yes, I was. And in 2 weeks, I'll be in Fargo, North Dakota.
A lot of traveling, and you could use a good audiobook, right?
Yes.
All right. How about this? The Invader's Plan, Mission Earth, Volume 1, by L. Ron Hubbard. How's that grab you?
I'd like to know more, Dave.
Okay, well, here's a short synopsis of it. The Voltar Confederacy has a long-range strategy to invade Earth and use it in their conquest of the galaxy. However, the discovery that Earth is being destroyed by pollution, Royal Officer Jetero Heller is sent on a top-secret mission to handle this threat to the planet's life. But why is the head of Voltar's intelligence agency determined to sabotage the mission and see it fail? Well, you'll have to read the book to find out, or listen to the book on Audible. It's called The Invader's Plan, Mission Earth, Volume 1. L. Ron Hubbard, he's the guy that invented Scientology, right?
Yes, and pretty much, as I recall, he's like one of the biggest authors to do like a space opera of sorts.
This might be part of it, because when I was looking at the page that this is on Audible, it said check out the rest of his Mission Earth series. So maybe this is part of that.
Maybe.
So, I mean, say what you will about L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology, I think he's a pretty good author. Like, I hear that what was the bad movie they turned in?
Oh,
Battlefield
Earth. Yeah.
I heard the actual book is pretty decent. The movie sucks, but the book is pretty good.
I fell asleep during the movie.
I'm still waiting for that 2 hours of my life back.
Yeah, no. It's thank your lucky stars, Anessa, that you fell asleep.
Best sleep ever.
Yeah.
So anyways, you can check out this book or whatever you want for free. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts, and we thank Audible for their support of the alien invasion. All right, let's move on to this.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
All right, Bradley, what do you got for the Creature Feature this week?
Okay, this week I've got an alien that I'm not going to tell you where it's from. I want to do the rundown. I want to give you the name. I want to give you some of the describing features and plot elements that involves this alien, and I want to see if you know from what movie this alien is from. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. The alien race is called the Kylothians, and the Kylothians are a race of strange aliens from the planet Kyloth. They appear to be entirely made of small tentacles, which are wrapped around each other. We only know of one Kylothian by the name of Serlina, who is the queen of the Kylothians. The Kylothians are extremely small, roughly the size of an earthworm, and about as long as one. Now, they are very aggressive, and they can shapeshift into any form and size using their vine-like tentacles. Because they're so small, their ships are about the size of a tin can. But despite their size, like I said before, they're extremely aggressive and are able to shapeshift enough that they could actually scare a dog, which is over 200 times its size. And if threatened, they are capable of eating beings whole when in their larger disguises.
Wow.
Now, from what, and I'm even going to limit down the genre, the form of media, from what movie are the Kylothians from? And to help you out just even a little bit more, I am going to pull up an image of the Kylothians, and I'm sorry if you if you're not seeing the video podcast or the video show, you are not going to be seeing this, but there. That is what a Kylothian looks like.
I have to like lean forward to see. Men in Black?
I was going to say Men in Black.
You are correct. The Kylothians and Serlina are from Men in Black 2.
Ah.
Not the best of the Men in Black series, but Laura Flynn Boyle actually plays the human disguised version of Queen Serlina of the Kylothians.
Hey, question for you, Brad. Is 3 better than 2?
Yes.
I like 3 better than 2.
I haven't seen 3 yet.
3 really wonderfully wraps up.
Cry.
Yeah, it really does. If you possess a soul, you will shed a tear. And you really kind of realize a lot. You find out a lot more about Agent K, Tommy Lee Jones's character, and you really, for as much as he seems to have a stick up his hindquarters, you see this movie and you kind of begin to understand why.
Yeah.
Hey,
and you really feel bad for Agent K, but you kind of admire him for doing the things that he's done to keep the Earth safe.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a pick of you. You picked that, right? On a previous episode.
Yes, actually, I picked that was my pick after I saw it in the theater. I really did enjoy it.
I do not know why I haven't seen it yet. Somebody's...
I don't know, but you need to see it.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah. You know, a lot of people didn't see it because they felt that like they got really burned on 2, and 2 wasn't really that good. But 3 was really kind of a return to exploring the characters' motivations and the depths of how much they care about the Earth and the people on the Earth and what makes them tick. So,
yeah,
okay,
a really good film.
All right, so what else is up with the Kylothians?
You know, I lost track of my sheets here, and what do you mean, what else is up with the Kylothians?
Is there anything to add about these guys?
No, except the Men in Black end up stopping Queen Serlina from taking over the Earth. But that's pretty much it. A very creepy-looking alien for sure.
They're all tentacles.
Yeah, and they seem to have no concept of physics and creation and destruction of mass to alter their shapes and sizes and disguises. It's really unusual, odd.
Did they ever explain how exactly the shape-shifting works? I know that you said something briefly about it, but...
Essentially, it's like there are so many tiny tentacles that they can reshape and reform to, and because they can just spontaneously produce mass, they can actually end up weaving the tentacles in a way that they actually look like other things.
That's crazy.
Other beings. They take on different disguises, be it organic or inorganic, I believe, too.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, so the Kylothians is our creature feature for the week. Thank you, Brad.
You are welcome.
You know that you can listen to this and all the other Galactic Netcasts on Stitcher Smart Radio.
I find myself using Stitcher a lot more, especially now that I know that I can have it on my Chrome browser as an add-on. So I'm listening to I listen to The Nerdist. I also listen to our other shows, Time Traveling Robots in Space, which is on hiatus right now, but also listen to, oh my God, Film School, Sci-Fi Film School.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is there any other podcast besides ours that you've listened to using Stitcher?
The Nerdist.
Well, besides
I listen to Marketplace, which is American Public Radio.
Yeah, that's a good podcast.
Show. Those are the main ones that I'm listening to right now.
Okay.
I'm really kind of catching up on some of the Nerdist stuff and picking through it, and I think I'll be adding some more interesting podcasts. I know Alec Baldwin's got a good podcast, and start digging into more of the other sci-fi podcasts that are out there too.
So yeah, you can check out Brad's, what he's been listening to, or other ones, or us on Stitcher Smart Radio. If you don't have it, you can get it on your iPhone, your Android phone. The Chrome and Firefox both have extensions or add-ons, right?
Yes.
Okay. You can get it on your Nook tablet, your Android tablet, whatever. You get it all kinds of different platforms. Go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcast and then enter the promo code galacticnetcast. What are you laughing at, Anessa?
I was just laughing because everyone left the chat.
Oh, yeah, the chat room. Yeah, I think we bored them. Anyways.
I think it was my fault with my name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
hey.
Let's not. Shit, don't.
I'm not going to mention it
All right.
on the show, but at the time we were having the conversation, I was signing into the chat and just typed it in there. So.
I don't think you offended them, to be honest. I don't think that was the problem.
So, anyway.
Okay. So.
I can't believe you did that. I salute you. That's hilarious. And I wish that we would actually say the name on there, but
yeah, let's not.
It seems to have gone over very big in the chat room.
For like 5 seconds.
Very big in the chat room.
Yeah, oversized, one might say.
Yeah.
All right. Possibly colossal.
Okay, so it's going to be hard to edit the audio part. Stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter the promo code galacticnetcasts, and we thank Stitcher for their support of the Alien Invasion podcast.
Just think really big sausages.
All right. Another clue from Anessa. Thank you very much. All right, let's move on to picks. What do you got, guys? Who's first?
Oh, I'm first.
He's raising his hand.
Yes! My pick this time around is actually... a couple of episodes. They did a lot of, two-part episodes. And one of them that I picked, two-parter, from Justice League Unlimited, which does indeed involve aliens as well as comic books, two things that I do enjoy. The episodes were Alive and Destroyer. No, they're the final two episodes of the series of Justice League Unlimited. They started out as Justice League, and then that was two seasons, and then they kind of expanded the scope and brought in more superheroes than the core seven that were in the first two series. But they it's the final two episodes of the series, and in the plot, Lex Luthor is looking to reobtain godhood. He had enhanced powers, essentially, from an alien creature named Brainiac. And he's kind of obsessed to get this power back. And he ends up finding a way to reobtain the power, and he's warned by a character who has a great knowledge of time and space, saying that, you know, you're going to do something really horrible here. And of course, he's a bad guy. He's not going to listen. So Lex Luthor at this point had gathered together all of these villains. You know, we had this whole huge gathering of the superheroes that made up the first two seasons. And in this last season, Lex brought together all of these villains, essentially the Legion of Doom. For those of you that might have watched the old Legion of Superheroes, or not Legion of Superheroes, I'm sorry, the old Justice League cartoon, there was the Legion of Doom, which was a collection of villains, which they kind of, I don't think they ever, I can't quite recall, but I don't think they actually called them the Legion of Doom, but they even used the old ship look that they had from the 70s cartoon. Lex takes over this whole group and decides that he's going to use all these people to help him reobtain godhood, and his the bone that he throws them is, if they help him, he'll make them all lieutenants in his new world order. But he's tricked, and he actually reassembles an old alien villain of Superman's named Darkseid. And the battle for the Earth begins, and all of the villains and all of the heroes have to team up to save the Earth.
Oh, so the villains and the heroes teamed up?
Yes, they had to, because Darkseid is an incredibly powerful villain. And he also has he controls a planet called Apocalypse, and the planet is covered with all of his evil forces, all of his evil minions, and they invade the Earth. So the only way to really stop them is to have these combined forces of good and evil work together to save the Earth.
I remember Darkseid from Smallville, the last couple of seasons he was on.
Yes. The interesting thing about Smallville was they did unique twists on a lot of the characters.
Kind of like they do with Once Upon a Time, that TV show.
I've never watched it, but I've heard stories about it.
Yeah, they changed the lore just a little bit, and they do the same thing with Smallville. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, I don't want to give too much more away as to how things shake out. But we will have a link to this in the picks section, because you can purchase I believe I put up the link for the second season, in which you would find these two episodes, okay. Second season of Justice League Unlimited. And you can purchase them through the picks section on galacticnetcasts.com.
Yeah, we get a small bitty percentage of get a little if you go through our portal, we get a small amount of money for that. So please do that. If you're interested in his pick or any of our picks, or if you're interested in buying anything on Amazon, go through our portal page and hook us up. All right. Anessa.
Yes.
You're up.
I have a pick, and it's a lot better than my pick from last week, and Brad didn't have to watch it because it was a short story. So... it's a short story called Alien Invasion of the Zombie Apocalypse, and it is by Ford Forkum. The description, or I guess a little synopsis of the book, says there's two end-of-the-world scenarios. You've got the zombie apocalypse, and you have the alien invasion. And the aliens invade at the time of the zombie apocalypse, and there's apparently a vampire problem as well. So you've got vampires, you have aliens, and you have zombies. The aliens come, they invade. Basically, they land at a college campus that's swarming with zombies, and they're basically there to abduct and take them back to their planet and turn them into a slave race. And they make an announcement over their audio system of the spaceship. Like, hey, we're here to abduct you. And then they land the ship and they put down their little drawbridge or whatever. And they tell the humans to line up single file and get on the spaceship. And instead, it ends up being this big horde of zombies that overrun the ship. And it ultimately becomes a tale of people trying to survive this zombie apocalypse. Well, the aliens also have to try to survive the zombie apocalypse as well. So it's entertaining. It's like 22 pages long, and it's a buck on Amazon.
What a great concept for a story.
I recommend it.
There was a vampire thing too?
Yeah, there was a vampire thing in addition to the zombie apocalypse. And then the aliens... apparently the, I don't want to give stuff away, but the aliens decide that they want to invade Earth just because they're bored. They've got nothing else better to do.
That sounds like a fun mashup. I hope they make a movie out of that. That would be awesome.
It'd be a lot going on.
Well, you know what? I hope if aliens ever invade us, I hope it's for that reason, that they're just bored.
They're just bored.
Yeah.
They're like, we're bored, we're going to go invade Earth, and apparently they checked everything out the day before, and everything was fine on Earth, and they're like, hey, this is a good time to go invade Earth, and then they get here, and they're like, hey, everything turned to crap.
No.
What's the deal? So, yeah, it's entertaining. Even the aliens are adorable, and when they laugh, they squeak. They sound like little squeaky toys.
How could you not like those kind of aliens?
I know. And then the vampires are very overly dramatic. I don't know. It's kind of a cross between the, quote, modern day vampires, I guess, and the traditional vampires, in that the current genre of vampires are very overly dramatic and whatnot. But it's mixed with the older idea of vampires, where they turn into bats and fly off. So
cool. Yep. All right, awesome, good pick. And so we will definitely have the link to that on the picks page. All right, so my pick is a podcast. Can you believe I'm actually listening to another podcast? I am a traitor.
Shame on you.
Yeah, I'm a traitor.
Trader.
Well, you know, once in a while you have to look around and see what other people are doing, and this one is called Podcast UFO, and as you can tell by the title, it's all about basically UFOs and aliens, kind of like what we do, but they do less of the fiction kind. We, you know, we focus on movies and TV shows and stuff. They really don't. It's an interactive audio podcast covering all aspects of the UFO phenomenon, such as sightings, abductions, cover-ups, and so much more. And on each episode, they cover the news of the week and then welcome a guest on. And it's interesting because both hosts have actually been witness to a sighting. They've actually both seen UFOs. So we got some work to do, people. We need to go out, start hanging out in fields, and we have to have sightings to be a legitimate alien UFO podcast.
I live in the DFW area. Can I just say a lot of these things I see flying around are UFOs, even though they're airplanes? Would that work?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. See UFOs all the time then.
You got that big that observatory, too. And I say you could just go there and look through the telescope and say a star is a UFO.
Yeah. As many times as I've been out to the observatory and looked through telescopes, I haven't seen any UFOs. They're all pretty obviously like either satellites or the International Space Station or airplanes.
Can you actually see the ISS pretty clearly through that telescope?
Not clearly. It's actually kind of difficult to get the ISS in a telescope, just because it's only visible in the night sky for maybe like 8 minutes from the time that it's high enough above the horizon to see. and then it makes its way across, and then it sets.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 6 to 8 minutes, maybe. I don't know, maybe a little longer than that. It's been a while. But a few years ago, when I first started working for the astronomy program, one of my coworkers and my boss at the time decided that they were going to try to photograph the International Space Station. And they had a Newtonian telescope, and they mounted a camera onto it. And one of them basically manned the telescope, and the other one was there trying to take the pictures. So one was trying to keep it in the eyepiece, and I was trying to, you know, get the settings on the camera right. And they were actually able to capture the ISS. And essentially, it was like this bright, not really a blob, but it's like an outline of the International Space Station. And it was right after they had installed the new solar panel, so you could see that feature.
Oh, neat.
Which is kind of cool, but yeah, it's a bit of a challenge to actually get it in and keep it in your eyepiece. Otherwise, it's just like, shoop. So,
yeah. Fast moving.
Very fast moving.
What else?
Especially when you have like your field of view is like the size of like a pencil eraser of the night sky. So yeah, it makes it kind of hard when you're looking at a tiny little spot.
That's like trying to, what's a good comparison? What would be a good comparison? Like a real life, everyday comparison.
Real life, everyday comparison about trying to, I don't know.
Brad's Googling it right now.
I'm trying to think. It would be like trying to look out a peephole from like a foot away. Like you only see like a tiny amount of light in the peephole.
Okay,
maybe.
Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah,
so,
that's a good one.
Or it could be like bullseyeing womp rats while flying a T-16 Skyhopper just for fun or target practice.
Hey, there you go. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar. Where's that from? Oh.
I totally made that up just now.
Good one. That's good writing. You should make a movie, Brad.
I was thinking about it. It's kind of like a space opera, maybe in three parts.
There's a war going on. That could be part of the title, perhaps.
It's going to be more like the hero's journey, you know, discovery, the fall, and then redemption.
And there's the evil character.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's probably got dad issues. Mm-hmm. He might even be adopted.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
Yeah.
I think you got something there.
I'll have to work it out.
All right.
Volunteer to help with the camera stuff.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, this podcast is pretty awesome. It's very, they cover a lot of news at the beginning. In fact, they covered that movie that we were talking about earlier called Sirius. I wonder if that's a Sirius movie. They have a really good forum section, too. And, check it out. You got to promise us to not leave us. You can't stop listening to, you can't unsubscribe us and go to these guys. You can taste these guys, maybe add it to your collection. But
that sounds inappropriate.
Not taste, like taste test it. That's what I meant.
Test run?
Test run, there you go. There you go. Sample it. Sample podcast UFO if you want. But, okay. All right. So that's
Don't abandon us or else I'll cry.
Yeah. Do you want to make an Nessa cry? Do you? People? So that's my pick.
Sad trombone is sad.
All right. That's going to do it pretty much for this edition of the Alien Invasion Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Go to subscribe.galacticnetcast.com and find all of our shows. And subscribe to the Mega Feed. That's going to get you the next Sci-Fi Film School podcast, the next episode of Closer Encounters with myself and my girlfriend Stephanie. Definitely subscribe to the Mega Feed by going to subscribe.galacticnetcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, and leave a comment on iTunes and some 5-star ratings, if you will. All right, before we take off, though, we do have a report from our intrepid reporter, Jason Taylor from Kansas. He went to Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City over the weekend, and he left us a voicemail telling us all about it.
Hey, everybody. It's Jason from Kansas. I just wanted to call real quick and tell you I was excited about our weekend. We had a Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City. Got to see George Takei, which is Sulu. He's a real cool dude. Lou Ferrigno, which was the Hulk. Got to meet a couple of authors from that does the Star Trek novels, Dayton Ward and Kevin Dillmore. Real cool dudes. I'll be seeing them again in May when I go up there for a Kevin Smith show. Also got to meet Daphne Ashbrook, who is the American companion in the Doctor Who movie. She's also been in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Got to see Ray Park, who is Darth Maul in Star Wars. And Peter Mayhew was there, which, of course, is Chewie. Got to meet Andy Parks, who does the writing for Green Hornet comic book. My wife got to meet Josh Adams, who does the artwork for the Doctor Who comic books. And I also, I tagged a picture for Brad of a bearded dude in a Green Lantern shirt because he was the only dude there in a Green Lantern shirt. And I remember Brad saying in a past episode that he was a Green Lantern fan, I believe, if I remember correctly. So, anyways, a lot of cool stuff. R2 droids everywhere. There was TARDISes, there was Daleks, there was all kinds of crazy stuff. It was just a blast, and we are working on costumes for next year. So anyways, just want to let y'all know, I probably left a bunch of stuff out, but anyways, take it easy, and I'll talk to y'all later.
That is awesome, and I didn't realize that Jason has this huge epic beard.
Yeah, he has an epic beard.
All right, so thank you, Jason Taylor, for making that pilgrimage and giving us a full report on Planet Comic-Con. I need to go to a convention one of these days. Never been to one.
You do.
Need to experience it before I die.
Yeah, I've been to Gen Con back when it was still in Milwaukee. That was the last time I've been to a convention. So that would have been like early 2000s.
And Ines is going to conventions all the time, so...
All the time. Well, next one's in May.
Well, compared to us, they're all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I originally just started working conventions, and then I started attending them.
All right, that's going to do it for this Alien Invasion number 65. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening, everybody. Final thoughts. Let's go around the room. Anessa's freaking out. She's like, what do I say?
Oh my God,
what do I say?
Oh, actually,
I had a final thought last week, and then like my internet died, so I don't even remember what it was.
Actually, I need to talk with you guys. I'm finishing up the concept for the special edition Galactic Netcast mugs that I'm putting together, and I liked your idea, Dave, of having a saying. So I would like on the front side of the mug, if the mug is facing somebody else, would have the Galactic Netcast logo.
Mm-hmm.
With the saying that we have for the graphics, you know, podcast on science fiction, you know, so on and so forth. But then on the back side, the side that would face you while you're drinking from it would be a saying, like, be excellent to each other. And then, you know, because I want to personalize each of the mugs, so I need to get some information from you and Anessa and from Jason. I think for Peter's, I would like to get some feedback from Peter, but I want to have it say, you know, Lexi's dad. The saying on
yes, that would be
his.
Awesome. You know, Lexi's dad.
Yep.
But yeah, I like where you're going with this. Like for Paul's glass, it'll be excellent. Be excellent to each other. We have to figure out mine and Nessa's and yours too, Brad.
Do you have an idea for yours?
For me?
Yes.
No, I have no idea whatsoever.
I mean, the only person that's got really a phrase that's consistent is Paul.
Is Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason can have Jason from Kansas because that's what he always says.
Or maybe just like, you know, yeah, I guess Jason from Kansas, but then it gets redundant if his name's on the other side.
Yeah.
So.
Galactic Netcast.
And then
Jason,
the other side could say
Jason
from
Kansas.
Kansas. Hey, that's what the side could say is from Kansas, like dot, 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 from Kansas. So when you turn it around, it's like Jason. From Kansas.
Yes, exactly. Cool. All right. I'm looking forward to our mugs. That's going to be cool.
Oh, me too. I'm excited.
That's going to do it.
What about Anessa? Are you letting her off the hook?
Should I?
Yeah, you should totally let her off the hook.
Okay.
Otherwise, our podcast is going to be another half an hour long.
An hour while I'm trying to think of a final thought.
Brad, do you have one?
I love our listeners. That's my final thought.
Hey, great. I like that. That could be
They're
your
pretty awesome people.
Yeah, they are awesome. I love our listeners, and we should. I love each and every one of you for listening and for subscribing. All right, Brad, take us home.
Sounds good to me. I think I've pretty much milked anything that I had. Once these mugs are done, I'm hosed. I'm gonna have to come up with something else.
All right.
His final thought was about the mug.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Nice mugging.
We'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Bye.
Bye. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.